Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest backpedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal.
Hello and welcome to the Glovers Cast on the same day as a defeat to Torquay United. We are starting 2022, breaking rule 2 of the Glovers Cast. Here to break the rules with me is Ben Barrett and David Coates. All right, gents, how are you? Happy New Year.
And a very happy New Year to you as well. How are we doing? Are we okay?
Yeah, all right. All right. What about you, Dave? You okay?
Yes, not too bad here, thank you. No glad tidings, unfortunately, to bring. But it's a bit strange not to be sleeping on it, isn't it? But less than four hours after a defeat, and here we are.
Yeah, I feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Hopefully, well, the listeners will have had a night to sleep on it at least, so hopefully they slept a bit more comfortably.
Yeah, true. Yeah, It was a strange afternoon. The football, I don't know, we played all right. Yeah. We did okay. It's quite an even game. The first half was it was lots of nearly moments, you know, balls weren't quite right, crosses weren't quite right, but I thought we looked better than Torquay. We certainly gave as good as we got, and we probably had the better openings. Tom Knowles had a couple of good chances, albeit from distance. But you know, the second half, I think Torquay, Gary must have put a rocket up them at some point, because they came out a lot stronger. They seemed to focus on our right hand side in for, you know, going down. I think they tried to get something out of Morgan Williams, really. They seemed to isolate him a little bit and try and get something. As the game wore on, it sort of ebbed and flowed that second half. It felt like we had a good couple of chances. Obviously, we take the lead through a sensational goal from Jordan Barnett. Like, he teed it up and I was like, no. And then it flies into the toppest of top corners, like one of those ones where the keeper's never going to get near it. It was a sensational hit. And the celebrations after were good fun. A knee slide, as you can imagine. He sprints towards the Thatcher set. Quite a long way to run because he hit it from so far.
Could he have not turned around and run in front of the Torquay fans? Would that have been easier for him to do? I'm surprised he didn't do that.
That would have been good. That would have been very good. But no, he celebrated with his captive audience. Yeah, sensational goal. Sensational. Well, certainly up there as one of the best, you know, one of the best strikes from distance we've seen, I'd say. Just struck so cleanly, straight into that top corner. Then it all went a little bit wrong, really. The rain, it felt like the more it rained, the worse we got. Adi Yusuf had a quiet game. It was one of those ones where it feels like he's trying hard, but nothing's landing for him. He's not getting any decent touches of the ball, and it was largely ineffective. So Quigley comes on, and Quigley really changed the game for us. When he came on, we were winning headers, which we weren't doing against their two centre backs or three centre backs. I forget how they set up, but he was winning quite a lot, and had a couple of decent layoffs for Tom Knowles, and we started playing, and then it all just went to pot with Dale Gorman lined up a free kick. I feel like Dale Gorman took confidence from Jordan Barnett's goal.
Anything he can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, and Torquay set up a two-man wall. And I'm thinking, what's he doing? Why is he really lining up? You know, he does the whole Ronaldo step up like he's going to, you know, this is straight for the top bins. And just straight into the wall, Torquay break, force a great save from our new keeper, Mr. Barnes. And from the resulting corner, they score. And I think it was just such a frustrating equaliser. I mean, crap that they've scored, as the manager said as well, crap that they've scored direct from a corner, because, you know, really that's the hardest place you should be able to score from, really, from a set piece, going direct. And we shouldn't have been in that situation. There was no need for it. There was no need for us to be having a free kick in an attacking position to having to defend a corner in like less than a minute. It was just, yeah.
Where else have we had that this season? I'm struggling to remember where we criticised our bit of late game management. Where else was it? Answers on a postcard. I cannot remember for the life of me where it was, but it was somewhere else where a similar situation. We had an attacking free kick, and instead of keeping the ball, maintaining the ball, we let it go up the other end and they scored.
I can think of last season when Carl Dickinson took a free kick.
There was that one, but there was one this season. I want to say, I'm looking through the results now. Was it Boreham Wood away? 1-0 up early doors, Dale Gorman. Staunton made it 1-0, and then they scored fairly late on. Reese with a goal. Was it that one?
I seem to remember that.
No, that was... They equalised.
Yeah.
They equalised when Grant Smith dropped it in off the back of someone, and then they scored early in the second half because we were still queuing for a burger, Dave.
Yeah.
And they headed it in.
Maybe I was thinking then of last season with that Carl Dickinson opportunity, but it just seems to be a bit, I don't know, frustrating. Do you think, let's get on to the missing captain in Wilkinson. But it is becoming blindingly obvious that we're a different team without him, aren't we?
I think so, but also at the same time, you know, we had four changes in our five, you know, five at the back, really. We had a brand new goalkeeper. Moss was out, so Morgan Williams, who's been playing left backs, moved over to right back. Staunton's pulled back into defence to cover Wilco's absence, and then you've got Jack Robinson back for the first time in a while at left back. And then the result of that is you've then got a midfield three with Jordan Barnett in it. So those three have got different relationships. And then, I mean, the front three are, you know, the front three were happy with the front three, really. When you see them on the lineup, it's not a massive change. I think it's always when you've got changes at the back, such as we did today, it always was a bit of a worry, especially, you know, with Wilco out. That is a big loss. But I think the combination of not having Dan Moss was up there as well, because Moss, you know, Morgan Williams is very obviously a centre back, and I feel like the way we play sometimes we like to get it out on the right hand side to get Moss going forward, and Williams just isn't that, you know, he's not a fullback, so he's not that type of fullback when he does play fullback, so we sort of lost a bit of a get out with Morgan Williams at fullback, in my view.
And the manager spoke after the game, didn't he, and said that he felt like we were a little bit back to where we were last season with the back four chopping and changing quite so much. Because, say, with the exception of you know, the left back position, it's been pretty consistent all the way through, isn't it? But so that feels like it was the other big problem. But then it didn't sound like, from listening to it on the commentary, that they caused us a huge amount of problems, either in the first half or, you know, right up until they scored. I mean, the manager again at the end was saying about it was the last 15 minutes that really, really killed us. So,
yeah.
But then to Howler, well, absolute crap. He described the defending for the first goal, and then the second goal he called absolute crap, and then the first goal he pointed out the errors of Gorman and Barnes as well, who he said was at fault for the you know, if you can see the goal direct from the corner, you probably do have to look at your goalkeeper a bit, don't you? But
was, I think, you know, it's one of those where on a different day, different, you know, this is not a knock on the referee in any way, shape or form, but a different referee might think, oh, there's lots of action around the keeper there, I'm going to blow up here, because there were lots of bodies around in the 6-yard box, and you know you couldn't jump properly to stop that as such. But you know, I don't think it is any fault of the referee. It's just sort of, if you'd had a different one, you might have got something out of it. But that, yeah, that second goal, like at the time, you know, from where I'm sat watching it, it's a great finish. It is a really good finish. Don't take anything away from the finish, but the video that's you've shared with us and that's been put on Twitter from a Torquay supporter, they just don't go to him. They just don't close him down. You know, and it might be because the way where he takes a shot, he's quite far wide of the goal, so it's got to be something special to go in. And I think they wondered if, yeah, I think, you know, perhaps Robinson and I think it was Hunt's nearby, Robinson and Hunt are perhaps expecting a, you know, pullback or a cross. But he gets in, sort of, there was only one spot he could really aim for to get it in, and he's found it.
Found it, yeah. Should the keeper be doing better with that? I mean, it's a good finish.
But I'm not sure, because I think, you know, it's quite similar to the one we conceded against Woking. Campbell's. I think Campbell's was probably a little bit closer into the goal as well. They're really, yeah, I think if you were to run them next to each other, other than being at different ends of the pitch, they'd probably look quite similar. I don't know, it was a good finish. It was well hit. And it was difficult conditions as well. You know, at that time, the rain was absolutely teeming down.
I'm just re-looked at that video, and there's part of me, if people can see it, we will try and retweet it and put it on our socials. But Robinson is dealing with the guy who lays the ball back, drops back into his left back position, and then as this strange, loopy, scooped ball through goes forward, he just takes a step to his left. And I wonder if he thinks he's going to try and play offside, and then very quickly realizes that Hunt has broken the line and gone backwards rather than gone forwards. And if I pause it half a second later, you suddenly see the ball coming down, Max Hunt running backwards, and the other three a good yard in front of him. And I wonder if it's just a bit of new defensive shape miscommunication, that actually if Hunt had stepped up, the offside flag would have gone up. But because Hunt's gone backwards, Robinson's made half a step forward and then realised, oh, crap, I'm out of position. And I just wonder if there's a little bit of that Robinson's instinct was to try and go forward and look for an offside. The finish, it's a good finish. It's not an easy skill. Ball's dropping. He's got to take it under. He's got very little goal to aim at. And on another day, I mean, it clips the inside of the post.
Yeah.
It doesn't take an awful lot more to hit the post and go back out. And we do have people backing up. So should the keeper be doing better? He'll be disappointed. He'll be more disappointed about getting beaten direct from a corner.
Yeah.
But he'll be a little bit disappointed, because he doesn't need to get much of a finger on that to tip it wide or to tip it onto the other half of the post. There's a lot of mini little tiny nuancy things. I feel like we should get Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher and the big white and the big interactive board out and start drawing lines on the screen to just from that one angle. Yeah, 90th minute or whatever it was, late on, you've been under the caution. Yeah, there is. There's just a half a split second of hesitancy from the left back, from Robinson. And you can almost, I almost am prepared to forgive that. Hasn't played for a while. Strange players to the right side of him. Strange goalkeeper behind him. I'm almost prepared to forgive him. If we're 3-0 up, we don't even talk about the goal.
No.
We don't even talk about that. You just kind of go, yeah, good finish that. Fair play. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to get angry about the fact that we've conceded a goal with tiny little bits of, yeah, what ifs. I think we should be more angry about the fact that we haven't capitalised on those periods of play when we were on top. Because it sounded like, and again, I can only go off Sheridan and Lawson, but it sounded like we had moments, we had pressures, and we had spells of 4 or 5 corners in a row, and we haven't taken advantage. And I think that has to be the bigger frustration for me.
Yeah, I think a lot of our pressure came from those corners, but there was nothing, again, you know, it's like, classic case that we've been talking about all season. Nothing clear cut. Everything was half, you know, half chances. Our goal was, you know, what's our goal going to be on an XG thing? Like, it's not going to be very high, is it? It's, yeah, the situations we created were all sort of, like I said, nearly moments. They weren't quite clear cut. This wasn't, you know, Adi Youssef sticking two away against Woking, clean through on goal. And with the full, you know, goal to aim at. So again, and I think the manager alluded to players like Wakefield and Knowles being tired in his post match, and I think there's that. There definitely was that element to us. We seem to lose our width, and I don't know if that was, you know, that was maybe down to, so we took off Williams, Barnett went to right back as we chased the game. And I think we lost, you know, we didn't seem to get Charlie Wakefield with chalk on his boots late in the second half. Knowles was further inside. You've got Reed and Quigley who are going to, you know, try and stay central when they come on. And we sort of lost. Yeah. I don't feel like we did. Where we've played well is when we've got those wide players, you know, getting around fullbacks and getting crosses in, and we weren't able to do that in the second half. And that might be down to how Torquay played and how, you know, they did control most of the second half. I felt they controlled it. We changed it up when Quigley came on. We sort of had a really good 5-10 minute spell, but, you know, once Torquay got their first goal, it sort of felt like the second wasn't far behind. It took a bit of time, but then once they got that second, they've got the experience and the, I know we're not allowed to talk about experience, are we? But they've got those players in there that just saw the game out. I was impressed with Asa Hall. He did very well. And Danny Wright, how does he still go?
37, he's quite a young man still, you see, so he's still got a lot of time. Is out. But I'd be interested to hear from the Neville and Carragher, and the two of you can decide which one you want to be, of the South Somerset, what you think of, because Darren Sall, speaking after the game, said we are maybe going to another period where we have to change in terms of the tactics that he's playing. Do you think we're going to go back to 4-4-2 with Reed and Quigley? I know at the end of last season when we saw Reed and Quigley together, it didn't work. Do you think we can do that to give the likes of Charlie Wakefield and Tom Knowles a rest? I mean, Tom Knowles probably had a bit of a rest anyway, isn't he? He's been in and out of the side recently. But yeah, one of you has to do a man cack and the other one has to do a Scouse one. So go.
You know, like, I think, you know. that was terrible, wasn't it?
There you go. Here's South Somerset's second favourite summariser.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Sheridan, how could you?
Sheridan.
His heart is in pieces.
I know. I know Lawson's the best. I know. You just have to tell
you
me.
You have to keep rubbing his face in
you
it.
You don't have to tell the world.
Oh, just heartbroken. Ben, all you need to say is, fucking hell, ref.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Repeatedly on the BBC.
If anything, I'm too professional. I tell you what I would like, and I think this is maybe where rule two would have actually come in handy for both the manager and us here. When we got the team news for this, we all had a slightly different idea as to what the formation was. And I think that's not the way to go. Were we trying to put square pegs in round holes, or were we going to go with the players we had on the pitch? Because if we're going with the players we had on the pitch, you probably would have had a back three and wing backs in some way, shape or form, because you would have accepted that Williams wasn't going to go to a fullback position, that maybe we had Robinson and Hunt in the middle, didn't we? And it was a bit, that's what I think I'd like to see now, is just get back to, you know, dealing with what we've got. I think it's time to ask the question about Alex Bradley.
Yeah.
Because I know he's seen as a little bit more of a midfielder, but he was the obvious right back choice, was he not? Of the ones we knew were available. Short of Martin Little being available.
More obvious than Morgan Williams for certain. Yeah.
So for me, there's a question, just a curiosity around Alex Bradley.
He hasn't
even got on there. At the times where it wasn't going right, we haven't put him into that position. And I'm a bit confused by it. And I just think if we had our group of players, and I know we've had to make a change late, Lou Wilkinson turned up at the ground, crying out loud. So we were clearly planning on things until very, 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 very late yesterday, looking one way. And by the time 1 o'clock turns up, it looks different. But I think my initial reaction would have been, okay, I need square pegs and square holes. I don't think it looked like that when we got the team sheet. And I think that's maybe what the manager's alluding to of, actually, let's just get back to putting players in their best positions.
The whole Alex Bradley thing, like, he was our first choice right back for, you know, the second half of the season. Like, and it's just odd, isn't it? It's a very odd situation. He's not become a bad player. You know, he's come down from League One. He was, you know, he was at Lincoln, wasn't he?
Yep.
Like, it's almost like, and this is totally based on zero information and total wild speculation, but it's almost like, the next time he starts a game, do we have to pay someone some money? Like, you know, if we signed him and said after so many appearances, he's, you know, you'll be owed this, because, like, what is the reason? Like, I know he missed the last couple of games, but it almost feels like there's some sort of selection.
Well, he played him in the trophy game, didn't he? And the manager made the point of saying that, you know, he deserves his chance. He's been very professional and all of this. So it's not like it doesn't sound like there's an issue there, does there? Not with him anyway, as a player.
No, so, and certainly at the start of the season, when we were pre-season, he was, you know, when I watched us at Taunton, he was right back. I know Mark Little, you know, I assume we've signed Mark Little to be first choice fullback. But, you know, Bradley came in after Little was injured against Forest Green Rovers. So, I don't know. It is a confusing one.
So, by my recognition, he's played exactly 30 times. Which would be, if it was 29, you could almost go, okay, 30 games would be a fee, wouldn't it? But at it's 16 starts in the league, 11 substitute appearances in the league, 2 FA Cup from the bench, and 1 FA Trophy. It's 30. On top of the 4 you had as a loan spell before it became permanent.
Yeah. So, unless there's any competitions that can count, I don't know. I got no idea. It's one of these things. It's such a baffling, you know, it just seems so odd for him to go from first choice right back finishing last season to, oh, we'll shove a centre back in at full back who's been playing left back for the last 3 games.
So that's, and so to go back to the original point, when he talks about tactical changes, I don't think he necessarily is talking about getting the diamond back or going straight 4-4-2 or changing formation. It's about having enough tactics in the book that you take whatever combination of players you've got and one of them fits better than the other. Because should we have played 4-3-3 today with the players that we had available? Maybe not. Maybe we should have gone 3 at the back and had a flat 5 maybe in midfield and had Bradley and Barnett as fullbacks, and then had Staunton in midfield with a back 3 of Hunt, Williams and Robinson, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a qualified coach. That's why I'm sat here waffling rubbish with you guys rather than doing the job myself.
So I do wonder if that's an element here of, especially with players coming back, if we have got Mark Little, if we have got Joe Quigley, heck, if we've got Lawson Diaz, you know, we are sat there thinking, how can we best utilise the best players we've got available to us? Maybe today, because of the fact it was a little haphazard and we've got weird ones, suspensions and a new keeper and, you know, a late COVID test and all the rest of it, that we've kind of just flung it at a wall and hoped that some of it stuck. And it did for 75 minutes. And then it started sliding off again.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, we need to try and not the result in context. You know, we played all right. We didn't, you know, we took the lead. We looked the better of the sides in the first half. I think we edged it in the first half, but, you know, I don't think we need to get too carried away and think change the whole system and do all this, because I don't think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it necessarily needs a total change. I think we've been quite happy with a back four. I think if we go back to 4-4-2, we're going to lose what Charlie Wakefield and what Tom Knowles were providing us. And, you know, they do, you know, they move around, they swap over. They're not just right wing, left wing. They are all over the place. And today was, you know, I thought Tom Knowles had one of his, he did tire out towards the end of the game, but I thought first hour he was pretty much on it. You know, he was picking up the ball in good areas. He sold a few dummies and he had a good game, but we sort of ran out of steam, which is, you know, sort of disappointing. Maybe the game off wasn't great for us in terms of that. You know, the manager alluded to it in the press conference this week, didn't he? That he would have liked the Weymouth game to be on. And I think we sort of missed that bounce back opportunity against those Seagull botherers.
I think it's also worth noting that Grimsby, the defeat to Grimsby, was a really long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We went on a heck of a run in between then. And so I'd argue that we're in a bit of credit. And I've just looked now at the league standings. If we'd have won that game, we'd have been up to 34 points, which is only one place higher than we are now. And we would have still been overtaken by Grimsby, who have a game in hand on us, should they have won that game, for example. So actually, in terms of league position, in terms of sort of where we are, it doesn't actually make a blind bit of difference. Yes, of course, I understand it's three more points on the board, but I kind of don't care that we lost, but I'm a bit more nonplussed about it. Like, yeah, fine. We know there's a good team in there. We haven't known there's a good team in there. Like back end of sort of the first half of last season when we were going through that rough patch, we kind of questioned whether or not there was a good team in there. It turned up after, you know, after that hammering on Boxing Day, but we know there's a good team in there. And it's just going to take a little bit. It's going to take a bit of squad depth. Maybe, you know, you were there, Ian, but are we starting to see what happens when you have a smaller squad playing a lot of games at once? Do we fizzle out a bit early? Do we just seem to tire? Do we switch off a bit? Do we make those mistakes that we weren't making 2.5 months ago because we've been through the ringer a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think some mistakes certainly crept in. I mean, Gorman's free kick, you know, the first when he did the free kick, I don't know, I feel like perhaps if, you know, if there was someone like Wilco on the pitch, maybe he shouts at him and says, what the fuck are you doing? and said, just, you know, there's that element of, come on, try and be a bit sensible here. It's, you're not going to score from there. And if you are, well, it's one in a million.
What do you think someone actually said to Dale Gorman? Excuse me, dear boy. Well, what do you think you're playing at?
Yeah, someone egged him on. I don't know.
Exactly, yeah.
Shoot! I don't know. It felt... Yeah, and then I think it wasn't long after that he went to take another shot from a bit closer in, and he lost the ball and he goes down. You know, it was a good tackle, but he goes down and rolls around trying to get a free kick because it releases Torquay to have another, you know, break on goal. But luckily their striker pulled one of our defenders' shirts and gave away a free kick. But, you know, it could have been a carbon copy. Well, it, you know, it could have been, you know, the same situation where a lost touch because he wants to have a dig from outside the box could have resulted in another goal. There are those sort of those little bits and pieces. But I think the manager, you know, we talk about not having a squad. I think when you look at what's come on today, I think he's going to have a bit of a decision to make about up front now. Because I feel like Addy, you know, I didn't think he had his best game. Quigley came on and was impressive. And I think Reed came on and showed a bit more quality. The worry is, have we got three strikers who are all good coming off the bench rather than starting games?
Just make the sub in the fourth minute.
Yeah. Ah, that's a good
idea.
And then
another in half time, and then another.
Because, you know, when Reed started against Woking, he didn't, you know, he didn't have a good game. I didn't think we played to his strengths. We don't really know what Adi Yusuf's strengths are. I don't feel he's just, you know, crash bang wallop. We know what Quigley's good at. But yeah, we haven't got that. I don't know. We talked about it with Elliot, didn't we? About that Courtney Duffus type striker.
Yeah, strange one, isn't it, really? They've all got slightly different attributes and we'll all get slightly different tactics for them. Like we've seen Quigley not be ahead on the stick. Far from it, in fact. He wants the ball at his feet and he wants to get others involved. Three strikers is an awkward one, isn't it?
Do we think having a cup game coming up is a good thing then? Take the, or would we much rather be playing, who have we got, Southend in the league next, haven't we? Week on Tuesday, I think.
I think we need that cup game.
Yeah, I would agree. Take the pressure off. No one's expecting anything.
The sooner we play, and I think that's a good game to play because it'll have an element of spectacle about it. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows what Bournemouth team's going to turn up. Like, we could end up with a game against, you know, under 23 side if they're...
yeah, you know, COVID situation continues. They've gone off their game, haven't they?
Yeah, so I'm not... I'm not hitting panic stations, and I think we've seen enough about us in the last couple of months to think we're more than good enough to turn it around. I know the manager doesn't believe in runs, but he tends to go on them.
Yeah.
So we've had a nice long winning run, but now we need to make sure we don't, you know, we're not here in 4 weeks' time, 5 weeks' time talking about another defeat.
Yeah.
It feels like, we really should rule two of these things. But it feels like a fairly important January, doesn't it? We hope that there may be maybe a couple of additions, and we hope that there may be things off the field. But also, look at the games. Bournemouth, a free hit in the FA Cup. Southend, a game that we've really got to be thinking about winning because they are tosh. Needham Market, FA Trophy. I mean, with the greatest of respect to Needham Market, we should be thinking about filling our boots there. And then Wrexham at home. And then Woking away. With the greatest of respect, I think we've got to be thinking about beating Southend. We've got to be thinking about beating Woking. Wrexham at home should hold no fear to us. They got done again today. And then the two cup games, which are different animals. But if we can get to Solihull Moors, which is a toughie at home, with these two games behind us, a positive addition or two to a squad maybe, or, you know, a next round of the FA Trophy and a spirited performance and whatever the result is against Bournemouth, these two games won't matter. We will just write these off and move on, and we'll get our own back against them in the playoff final.
Do you think this game's a bit more, the result's a bit more disappointing from today because in history, when we've had these double headers with Torquay. It's either been one apiece or we won the first two, didn't we? Or the noise around, you know, everything that happened last week with the red cards, with the, you know, all the nonsense that happened off the pitch and all that sort of stuff. Do you think that's added to the sort of disappointment of today, really? Because it just felt like, you know, we wanted to get a bit of revenge or, you know, return the favour a little bit.
I don't really buy this as a derby particularly, and it certainly seems to, looking on, you know, judge these things on social media, but it certainly seems to mean more to Torquay fans than it means to us, but probably because, you know, they're two places in the division below, a team that gets battered everywhere they go, apparently. So I don't know what that says about Torquay, but I agree with whoever said we just, you know, move, put these one behind us and move on. I don't think it really matters. I think we've been paired against Torquay for the last couple of years just because, you know, geographically they're closer, but yeah, I don't, I'm not going to worry about the history of that one at all. We just, you know, forget about Torquay. That's it. We're done with them now, aren't we? Move on and see where we go next. Leave them to sit around in my table instead. I'm saying that like there's a Torquay fan listening, aren't I? There won't be any Torquay fans listening.
Shall we move on to some questions?
We have got quite a few, haven't we? This is the danger of inviting questions immediately after a match, isn't it?
Ben, are you happy to move on to some questions?
I think so, yeah. Should we start with ranking the BBC co-commentators in order below Lawson Diaz? Is that... Yeah, it's fine. No, it's not. Let's move on. Let's move on because I will come down very low on that list.
He's hurt. He's hurt, Sheridan, if you're listening.
I'm fine.
Oh, Ben.
I didn't want to do Chesterfield anyway. It's fine.
You're at least third, mate. It's fine.
Fourth or fifth.
Marcus is quite good.
Yeah, he's very good, to be fair. Very good, to be fair. I quite enjoyed Sam being quite honest last week, so that puts me on fourth. Who else have we had? Chris Wheel, he's up there. He's done it a couple of times. Oh, sixth.
Nick Crit. I mean...
Crit's nicest man in football. Oh, Jesus, I am so low on this list. Oh, right, move on.
We shouldn't have done this. You've opened up. No,
I've brought it upon myself.
Put himself in the hurt locker here.
Right, the OG, Paddy Horsington.
Nice.
Surely Alex, he's got three questions there, so we'll do these quick.
Okay.
Surely Alex Bradley would have been a better option at right back.
Yes, next question.
Square peg, square hole, move on.
Yeah. Just how bad is the Hewish Park match day experience?
You tell us. Ian out Perkins, of seven, Ian.
Out of seven, please, mate.
So inside the stadium today, I would give it a 4 out of 7.
That's not horrendous.
No, I think the fact that Torquay brought 1,000 supporters, more than 1,000 supporters, certainly added a bit of, you know, a bit of an edge to the fixture. It's not really had that for a long time. Not sure how many Weymouth brought, but there was, you know, there was a decent 2/3 of the terrace was packed.
So that's inside. What about
inside? Outside, one or two, maybe, because I saw a few people. I was one of the ones who, you know, I pre-ordered my ticket and was going to be collected on the match day. I arrived to the ticket office. There's four windows open. A to D, E to K. This is like the surnames. L to R, and then S to Z.
Did you wish you were called Ian Zerkins instead?
Well, or Ian Erkins, because the E to K queue was like empty. There was no one. They had to come out and ask if anyone's names began.
If you'd been Coates or Barrett, you'd have been away, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
There you go.
No, I wouldn't. Because
no, E to K.
E to K.
Oh, E to... Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was... you know, I sent you a picture at 5 minutes to kick off where there was still, you know, there's more than 100.
So if you were called Jones or, I don't know, Jenkins, you'd have been flying.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have been. But yeah, I think, you know, there's those things. I'm not one for having food at Hewish Park, and I should be, you know, but you know, history tells me not to bother because it's overpriced and not very good. So I think we know the match day experience can be better. We know it can be. I think
if you do like landfill sites, then it is, a, you know, it is worth visiting the back of the away terrace.
Yeah, but, and again,
or the home terrace, I should say. Yeah,
I forgot my welly, so it was a bit tricky having to walk past, walk through the away end, the home end. So
I will be hiring out stilts next time it rains there for anyone who wants to stilt walk their way through.
Yeah.
But Paddy's third question isn't a question at all, is it?
It's a statement.
I did really enjoy the game on Sunday. It was good to see the passion from the players. Now, come on, Paddy, that's not a question.
And again, though, like, you know, it's not a question, but it's one of these things, like the off-pitch experience, like, and what we get served up could not be further from this group of players and what they're doing on the pitch. And it's almost like, they're taking such a bullet for being good and working really hard and being a team that supporters can really get behind once they're in the stadium, that you do sort of, you know, you do sort of forget about the off-pitch stuff. It's we're very lucky to have this team. The owner is very lucky to have this team at the moment, because not that he's around to even...
He doesn't even follow. He doesn't even know what the result was today. So, okay.
But I do notice that Paddy has asked a third question, but it's in a separate tweet. and only you can answer this one, Ian, because it says, Ruben Reid looked great when he came on. Would you agree?
Out of seven?
I've got to stop scoring things out of seven because, I mean, it's middle of the park. It's a four. I think he did look... He had some nice touches. He held them off. He showed more in, you know, the spell that he came on today than he did against Woking, which I think said more about our first half performance against Woking, that we weren't getting the ball to him. But yeah, he looked sharp. He looked lively. He looked fitter. He had one decent opportunity, which was sort of charged down and deflected up for a corner. But yeah, I think I was quite happy to have three different strikers to come on or to be on the pitch during a game and not have to rely on one of them.
Fair point.
I think that'll be something going forward that we can use a little bit more. We said it a couple of times, didn't we, that Quigley had to run the line by himself up front, and then Youssef had to do the whole thing by himself. Let's look forward to a period of however long it can possibly be where we do have three genuine options and that we can make a change. We can set up one way, and if it's not working, we can make a change. We haven't had that whilst we've only had Quigley or only had Youssef. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's something we can now look forward to now they're all back.
Yeah, I can't wait for Ruben Reid to score a goal in front of the Thatchers.
I feel like
it's going to be such a moment because... You know, he hasn't scored in front of supporters, has he, since he's joined us? I don't think.
First spell?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we didn't score against...
Scored at Sutton, didn't he, when there were supporters there, but they were Sutton supporters.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I think I just feel like it's going to be quite a moment more for him than for Yeovilton, you know, for us as supporters. Just, you know... Judge me on this, yeah, pricks.
There's a title. Right, there's a question here from Harry Eaton, which kind of goes on to this. He says, what is with the majority of the fan base, at least from what I've seen, majorly disliking Joe Quigley? Yes, he's not the greatest striker we've ever had, but especially with our current situation, surely another striker is only a positive.
He's Marmite, isn't he, a bit? He's Marmite. I don't quite understand the unnecessary dislike for him, but I do think there are as many people saying that he's good rather than he's saying he's not. And so I don't know. I don't know. I really, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because I quite like him. I rate the guy. I think he's got goals in him. We saw that with that hat trick at the back end of last season. He's got little moves off the shoulder. He's got a bit about him in the air. He's got a bit about him to move quicker and maybe more agilely than his frame would suggest he can. And he's got a bit of link-up play. He's got a bit of everything. He's probably the most rounded of the three, if that makes sense.
I mean, if you look at him at the start of the season when he couldn't stop scoring, he was definitely all of that, wasn't he? And just to prove your point, later on, there's a question from Craig McCann that says, how good was Quigley when he came on and how poor was Youssef? Now, we know that Youssef, I think, is, well, we've struggled to try and understand what he is or what he isn't, haven't we, over the last few weeks or so. But, I mean, you saw... Well, Ian saw that game against Woking and saw from the highlights, he saw him, that he definitely does have something about him. I think when we saw him at Wrexham, Ben, you could see that he did have something about him. I think Youssef is just inconsistent, isn't he? You know, sometimes it doesn't come off for him. Other times it does. And maybe it's a bit of the same with Quigley. I mean, he hadn't been there for the last month and a bit, is he? Or over a month now, I think, Quigley, to be able to do it. But say you look at the start of the season where everything seemed to click into place for him, you can see what these players can be. But then if they were fully rounded, perfectly, you know, everything was working from all the time players, probably wouldn't be playing for us, would they? So.
Probably not. I mean, I thought Quigley did, like I said, Quigley did sort of change things when he came on. He, you know, we were putting balls up in the air towards Youssef and didn't win a lot. As soon as Quigley comes on, we won some headers. And I think, you know, it's quite an indication about what a handful he is when the Torquay defenders immediately grab a handful of his shirt every time the ball comes up to him. So I thought we did look better with him. I think his first real moment, he had a nice first touch, which he knocked down to Tom Knowles, who got a shot off. And it was just those little bits of... He's got such a, it's that whole cliche, but he's got such a good touch for his size. He just cushions the ball nicely. So him and Reed sort of share those attributes. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm just basing this on the Woking game when Addy came on, but, you know, he comes on and scores two goals and he does feel like he's more of an off the bench type player, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, the manager spoke about Quigley after the game as well, didn't he? But I don't know whether you know, he said that he didn't think we used him well enough. And he also said, we're still trying to come to terms with Dylan, the keeper's distribution. So I don't know whether that was, there were like long kicks that weren't going to Quigley, I don't know. But the other thing that he said was that he hated the fact that Joe Quigley was stood up in the dugout all the way through, which, to be fair, that must be a very high dugout if Joe Quigley stood up in it all the way through. But he said it made it look like a bus stop because everyone was stood up, but shows that he's keen to get on, which is good, I suppose. But was there anything you noticed that they didn't use him well enough today?
I don't know, really. I mean, I'm not a football manager. I felt like, I think maybe we did miss, you know, we didn't quite get into his feet as much. Maybe that's what he's alluding to. But the Torquay at that point, Torquay was so narrow and we were quite narrow as well. There were so many bodies in sort of those central areas that it was quite difficult for anyone to sort of do anything meaningful with the ball at their feet. You know, Sonny had a couple of moments, but even then it was a little bit far out to really create something super clear cut. That's my view.
Yeah.
I like this one from Daniel Harding.
What?
Do you have any way of letting Dale Gorman know it's okay to pass when 40 yards out and not shoot every time?
Somebody wants their tequila.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind. I didn't mind having pot shots up until today. But it felt like, today there was a couple times where you just think, you know, if you're going to be like, you're not going to be the Xavi or Iniesta of this team, but if you're going to be the player who keeps things ticking over, you need to do that. Like, if someone, you know, someone wants to shoot from 40 yards, they shouldn't, but like let Tom Knowles have a go from that far, or Jordan Barnett after today can shoot whenever he gets it. But I just think, you know, if Gorman was scoring these scoring these shots every week, then you could forgive him. But
or getting them on target.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if the keepers are pulling off saves, I'm not that bothered.
No.
If truth be told, if he's forcing tips around the post and we're getting corners out of it, or we're trying to snaffle up rebounds and things like that, I'm kind of okay with it. But when they're not really troubling people, then they can be a little bit confusing. Here's a crowbarred in question off the back of that. Do you feel like he tries to take on a bit too much in the way of responsibility when Josh Staunton's not next to him? Because I still have it in my head that Josh Staunton being out of the midfield is of a bigger loss to this team than maybe we appreciate right now. Even if he's at the centre-back.
Yeah, I mean, I think Staunton just he does provide us with a bit more balance, I think. I mean, you could argue that Jordan Barnett is very imbalanced, but I think Staunton... He's sort of got that calmness, and I don't know really. I think Staunton's great wherever he plays, really, and he does make other players around him look better. I don't know. Yeah, maybe Gorman does try to take on a little too much, but I still think he would have put that ball down from 40 yards and decided to shoot the free kick, I think. Either way, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't know.
In those positions.
We did hear this from Glenn Torren fans, didn't we? Like when he signed, they said that he shoots from everywhere. So I don't think it's a new thing for him. I think it's just something he does.
Yeah.
Some of these questions I think we've kind of answered already, because Joey Chinnock had asked about what needs to be done to get the match day experience back, which I think we've covered. And Steve, I won't even read out all those numbers because there's quite a lot of them. But Steve asked, what's the reason for not being able to buy tickets prior to the match? I really wanted to attend, but wasn't able to. Annoying for me and an obvious loss of revenue for the club. It doesn't make economic sense. Well, nothing but agree with that. Yeah. I didn't know if it was something like policing, because it was the same for the game down there, wasn't it?
Got to be the only thing.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if there was trouble or pyro or something last year. Was there on either game? I don't seem to remember anything.
Well, there wasn't last year because there was no support. Yeah.
No, but I mean the one before that. Sorry, but I don't know whether or not they've decided. I can't imagine the clubs would decide that. There's not going to be like you're not going to sell out the away end to the point where Torquay fans are buying home tickets, are you?
No.
I don't see that being a thing.
No idea. I feel like more. You're going to have more disappointed Yeovil Town fans who wanted to walk up to a game today than Torquay fans, aren't you? Because they can't even go to their own club because of those decisions. I don't know. We don't really know why the reasons are what they are. But, you know, I think in 2022... Yeah. After everything that's changed in the world in the last 2 years, to not be able to, you know, order a ticket online that appears on your phone and then get it scanned as you go in, for me is, I don't know, it's just rubbish, isn't it?
I don't think there's any reason why we can't do it, can we? But it probably just smacks of the fact that there's, you know, we are literally, I mean, we talk about being down to the bare bones on the pitch, off the pitch, blimey. We are really, there's a few people there, a very few people there who are working their backsides off. But as we all know, if you have very few people trying to do the jobs of a lot more people, then things are going to go wrong. I think that's what we're seeing a bit of, isn't it? But
yeah. And do you know, if it's costing us, you know, it's going to cost us money to get people on every turnstile with a little scanner to validate a QR code, isn't it? It's
yeah,
you know,
But we've heard from, you know, last time we heard from the owner, he was telling us that, you know, we needed however many thousand people it was in the ground. You'd have thought that, I'll give him an out if it was police advice and it was police, you know, recommendation, then you've got to go with that, haven't you? But it would seem an obvious way to try and
Remember anything like this before.
No.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I had season tickets before and it never really mattered. It didn't make a difference to me. I could just turn up and I was in. It just feels like it's bare minimum, isn't it? We're doing the bare minimum, or he is doing the absolute bare minimum to get by and keep the club running. He can, you know, put all these statements out all he wants about, you know.
All these statements, yeah.
Well.
All these hundreds of statements he puts out every week, yeah.
He can put out a quarterly 1,500-word statement all he likes, talking about how he's going to do the best for the football club, and there's going to be a fancy bar behind the terrace that isn't towed away by a tractor every day after the game's done because it's an external company doing it. It's
exciting long-term plan for the future of the club. And anyway, now we better move on. Clevo asks, is that strike from Jordan Barnett the best goal Ian has seen live at Hewish Park? If not, what would be his choice?
It's up there. Did we talk about Nathan Jones the other day?
No, I don't think so, but we could always talk about Nathan Jones, I think.
This right-footed one where he cut inside and went in off the bar. Definitely talked about that with someone. I remember when Nathan Smith scored a worldie as well. We got left-backs, isn't it? There's a bit of a theme here, isn't it? Left-back.
I think there was also one when Carl Dickinson scored an absolute belter as well, I think.
Oh, I can't remember that. I mean, I didn't see Arquin's goal. But Arquin's
that was on the volley.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was good.
Yeah. I was going back as far as Darren Keeling of 1998. He scored an absolute blinder against Kettering, and I always judge every goal I've seen against Darren Keeling in 1998. But that's only because no one else can remember it, so I can always say, "Oh, if it wasn't Darren Keeling." Yep.
What about Luke Ayling cutting in on his left foot against Birmingham and dinging one in off his standing foot in off the bar?
Yes, that was very good. They're always good with going off the bar.
Gavin Williams with the little bobble pinged up on his return 2013 against Oldham maybe.
Aaron Davies always got, was it Aaron Davies against Scunthorpe where he shoots and the keeper almost is like on his knees because he's like scrambling across to get it. That's a good one. Look that one up on YouTube. But yeah, today's was up there as certainly one of the best goals. I think, one of the best goals I've seen. Just a shame there was a bit of pyro after it, which I'm not a massive fan of.
Okay.
Naughty pirates.
Yeah. I'm not a massive fan either. I know that makes me a boring old git, but I'm not a massive fan either.
No, I think you have to have a bit of consideration about the people around you who might not want to have, you know, this smelly, possibly like dangerous substance go off around them and
in their lungs.
Yeah.
This might be a question for Ben because I know he's far more clued up on these kind of things. But Adam Skinner has asked, how many players need to be injured, have COVID, for us to cancel the Bournemouth game? If Wilco is out, we're in a position to try. Oh, sorry. If Wilco's out, are we in a position to try and postpone it until he's back? Are FA COVID rules different to the non-league COVID rules? Ben, I feel like you would know that answer better than any of us.
Well, when we got the news about Bournemouth being postponed this week, I did have a look at the FA Cup rules, and they are incredibly vague.
for the actual proper rounds of the FA Cup. With regards to the qualification rounds, they are incredibly specific. And they talk about windows of playing games that get postponed and talked about all the rest of it. But for the actual rounds proper, they are incredibly vague. And simply the only thing I can find is if the competing clubs are not able to play the match on a scheduled date due to COVID-19 or for any other reason, the match shall be played or not as directed by the professional game board, and or the professional game board shall take such action as it deems appropriate in its absolute discretion. As if to say they can do what they want. There is no reference to you need X number of players. The general rule or the general conversation has been 14 and a goalkeeper, which again is not physically listed in the beginning of season FA rules. It does say right at the very top, the association has retained some of the amendments and will make further changes in order to address the potential issues that may still arise. So they've kind of given themselves a little caveat out. But as far as I can see, we basically have to apply to not play the game, and then it is entirely at the discretion of the Professional Game Board Association what happens. When I pointed out yesterday that the Bournemouth incident, there are obviously no replays in this round. However, the date that replays would have taken place on, being Tuesday the 18th, has been left free by both clubs, i.e. we haven't rearranged the Weymouth game or whatever it may be for that date. Suggesting that there is a kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge between sides and to say, we won't put another game there in case we can't play this game. So for me, I believe that there is every possibility if Luke Wilkinson is positive. I don't think one would be enough, in the same way Morgan Williams wasn't enough to call off league games. But if it should spread and we should have suddenly 4, 5, 6 over the next few days dropping, we might be in a position to request it off and then have it replayed on or around that 18th of January. What that would do, though, would obviously we'd lose our TV fee. Because we would no longer be, well, I assume we'd no longer be on TV or on the red button. So the truth is, to answer the question, it's very, very vague. And I think it's basically case by case, individual team by individual team at this particular round. Previously, they had a very short window. If you can't play it on the Saturday, you have to play it before the next Friday. If you can't do so, you're out, basically. But at this point, it seems all very vague. So I don't know. I have tried to look.
We know there's one
that
rule.
That, folks, for the... is why he's the best BBC Somerset summariser. Justice for Barrett.
We know what one rule of FA Cup proper rounds are. That is that Manchester United must be on the television.
What are they up to now? 60-something consecutive FA Cup ties on telly?
Yeah.
Well, they need the money, don't they? Come on, let's
do
that.
Yeah. Well, they do. Yeah,
who wants to watch that dross?
Yeah. Well, Darren Saal and Adrian Hopper, I think, possibly.
Right. Anyway, should we finish? I'm just checking. I'm not going to miss a question from Colin.
No, you haven't missed a question from Colin. There is one there from Dave. London Green Dave.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to finish on.
Finish on that.
Best away day you've ever had, despite us losing the actual match.
I was going to say that Charlton game in the
final.
Oh, go on. Yeah.
Lost that 1-0. That was brilliant.
Brilliant. I was going to say Charlton in the FA Cup where we lost 3-2.
Yeah.
But that was a good game. That was a good game and a good day as well.
The Bolton one as well in the FA Cup.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was good. I think those two as cup games, I think that probably makes them a bit more special because they were bigger teams, weren't they?
And he also asks us what the worst away day you've ever done. And I'm going to say this one for Ben, but people might remember it as well. Do you remember when we went to Colchester on a midweek game, and you came down on the train. The only good thing about that was that we went to a harvester before, and I had an amazing Knickerbocker glory. But apart from that, that was it.
Was that the one where James Bailey scored like a 95th minute equaliser, and everyone hated it because it meant Darren Way kept his job for another week?
No, I can't. But I know the game you mean. I want to say that was Chesterfield, but Colchester was the one.
No, that was definitely Colchester.
Was it? I think we lost like 2-0 or 3-0. And the only thing I remember, but apart from the Knickerbocker glory, was that there was a song about Gozzy Ugwu to the tune of the Proclaimers. I would walk five to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to see Gozzy Ugwu score. Gozzy Ugwu, Gozzy. That one.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, that was
really I remember that one.
I would also chuck in the FA Cup game against Hartlepool that got canned about 20 minutes before kickoff.
Yeah.
Because of the snow. And we got there, and for some reason the gates were open and they let us walk in, and we went, you haven't even tried to clear the snow.
No.
It was like a foot of snow on the pitch. And we were like, this was never going to happen. Why are you calling this off at 2:15? You could have called this off at 9 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
So that was pretty horrendous for a game that never happened. For a great away day that we lost badly, when Southampton dropped to League One and completely played us off the park for a 4-0 win, and they had the front four of Oxlade-Chamberlain, Adam Lallana, Barnard and Lambert, and just completely tore us a new one. I thoroughly enjoyed watching that game of football because Southampton were just sensational. That was just one of those days where you sat there thinking, I'm just enjoying the spectacle at the moment. My team are getting spanked, but this is delightful football I'm watching. And so I thoroughly enjoyed that away day as well.
I think my worst, I got two. We went to Woking. It was years ago. It was when Warren Patmore had signed for Woking. And it was like lots of, you know, it was highly anticipated. And I think it was 0-0. And it was just an absolute damn squib of a game. But also when we played Southampton in the FA Cup, drove up with a mate, went to go and take our seats, which were taken by someone else. And then a steward just came up and was like, you're in the wrong block, you need to go. We weren't in the wrong block, there were just people just going wherever they wanted to. So then we moved and were sat further down out of the way of everything. We were rubbish. And then we had to get the train home because our mate's car had broken down. So we had to, the expense of a train, I think there was a rail replacement between Southampton and Romsey. So we had to jump on a coach to get to Romsey, then a very slow train from Southampton to Salisbury, then change at Salisbury. Ah, it were rubbish. That was in the FA Cup when we were in the fourth round, I think, because it was our championship season.
Yeah, I do remember that one as well. I think I remember coming down for that one. Yeah.
Blech, rubbish.
Yeah. Right. So we finish with those words. Yeah, rubbish.
Actually, kind of rubbish.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ben. What should we finish on?
Not sure. There's not a lot else to finish on, really.
No. Looking forward to Bournemouth and the FA Cup. Yeah. Happy New Year to all the listeners, and we'll be back on Thursday, Friday.
We do have one. It's not Thursday and Friday we're back.
No, it's not.
Wednesday we're back.
Yeah, we go. Let's break it. Yeah, you two can do it. You had a lovely New Year's Eve.
So what a week we've got lined up, genuinely. Late on New Year's Eve, Dave and I spoke to a footballer who has never once been contracted to Yeovil Town Football Club, and yet we all speak of him so incredibly highly. Should we say the name or not?
Yeah. Let's announce it, mate. Let's do it.
Dave and I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to what we can only describe as the nicest man in football that isn't Paul Warne. We spoke to Sean McDonald about his time at Yeovil. He is currently, he's just finished his self-isolation as you listen to this. After a bout of COVID, he's feeling fine, he's feeling great, and he had a great chat with us about his time, his five separate loan spells. So on Wednesday, episode 2 of Glover's Past from the Glover's Cast will drop into all your podcast inboxes. We're really looking forward to it. If you haven't listened to episode 1, Dave spoke to Howard Forrington and Mickey Engwell. Definitely go back and listen to that. But I'm really, really looking forward to hearing you hearing your thoughts on our chat with Sean McDonald. A great conversation with Sean Mack. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Dave, it was cracking, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Like you say, the nicest man in we'll say the nicest man in football brackets Wales, shall we? And then we can give Paul Warne and others as well can go in there somewhere, can't they? But yeah, he was a lovely fella and a good chat. So yeah, hope people enjoy that one.
That's how you end better.
There you go. Something to look forward to on Wednesday, everyone.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest backpedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil. Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott, goal!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.